Part 3. Unbroken. Chapter 14. The men at the gunnery station stood in salute as they carried out the orders of the Primarch. Heads bowed, they made the sign of the Aquila across their chests before the commander of the cannonade island on the prow of the fortress placed his hand on the firing lever. The officer paused for a moment and then pulled the massive trigger. Four high-yield ship-to-ship torpedoes flashed from their firing tubes, thruster rockets igniting to carry them the short distance from the fortress to the frigate. Each one was tipped with a compact but very powerful atomic warhead. One would have been enough to do the job, but after the catalogue of horrors that had walked the decks of the Eisenstein, the overkill was deemed necessary. The ship's duty was concluded, and only in death did duty end. The phalanx watched the last few seconds of the starship's life unfold. The massive construct, the nomadic home of the Imperial Fists Legion, was more planetoid than it was space vessel. It stood at silent sentinel over the ending of its smaller sister. The torpedoes impacted at the bow, the stern, and at equidistant points along the frigate's beaten and ravaged hull. The detonations had been programmed flawlessly, all four rippling into one seamless silent flare of radiation and light. The glow illuminated the surrounding vessels of the Astartes fleet and cast bright columns of white through the windows of Rogaldorn's Sanctorum atop the highest of the phalanx's towers. Garrow turned his face away from the flash, and in doing so felt an odd pang of regret, almost as if he had done the steadfast vessel a disservice in not watching her last moments of obligation to the Imperium. Dawn, some distance away at the largest of the windows, did not move. The nuclear light washed over the Primarch, and not for one moment did he flinch from it. As the flare died away, the Master of the Imperial Fists gave a shallow nod.
"It's done, then."
Behind him, Garrow heard Iacton Cruz's remark.
"If any taint of that warp witchery remained, it is ashes now."
The old warrior seemed to stand a little taller now that his power armor had been repainted in the old colors of the Lunar Wolf livery. Dawn had raised an eyebrow at the change, but said nothing. Garrow was aware of Barrick Kariah at his side. The shipmaster's face was sallow and drawn, and the Astartes felt pity for the man. Commanders like Kariah were as much a part of their ship as the steel in the bulkheads, and to give up his vessel like this clearly struck him hard. In his fingers, the man held the brass dedication plate that Garrow had seen bolted to the base of Eisenstein's navigation podium.
"The ship died well," said the Death Guard. "We owe it our lives, and more."
Kariah looked up at him.
"Lord Captain, at this moment I think I understand what you must have felt at Istvan III. To lose your home, your purpose."
Garrow shook his head.
"Barrick, iron and steel, flesh and bone, these things are transient. Our purpose exists beyond them all, and it will never be destroyed."
The shipmaster nodded.
"Thank you for your words, Captain. Nathaniel."
He looked to the Primarch and bowed low.
"If I may take my leave."
Dawn's adjutant, the Astartes captain from the boarding party, answered the question.
"You are dismissed."
Kariah bowed again to the Astartes and made his way out of the wide oval chamber. Garrow watched him go.
"What is to become of him?"
Cruz wondered aloud.
"New roles will be found for the survivors," replied the captain.
His name was Sigismund, and he was a sturdy, thick-set man, hair a dark blonde with a patrician face that echoed the same austere lines as his liege lord's.
"The Imperial Fists have a large fleet, and able crew are always prized. Perhaps the man can be put to use as an instructor."
Garrow frowned.
"An officer like that needs a ship under him. Anything else would be a waste. If only we could have taken the frigate in tow, perhaps." "Your recommendation will be noted, Battle Captain."
Dawn's voice was a low thunder.
"I am not usually given to explaining myself to subordinate ranks,
But as you are of a brother legion, and your disciplines differ from that of my sons, I will make this exception."
He turned and looked at Garrow, and the Death Guard did his best not to shrink beneath the steady attention.
"We are not given to waste time with ships that are wounded and unable to keep up with the phalanx. Already during this journey I have lost 3 of my own vessels to the storms in the warp, and still I am no closer to my destination."
"Terror," breathed Garrow.
"Indeed. My father bid me to follow him back to Terra in order to lend my arm to the fortification of his palace and the formation of a Praetorian Aegis. But with the aftermath of Ulanor and all that came from it, we were waylaid."
Garrow felt rooted to the spot. The same tense awe he had felt before Mortarion and in the Lupercal's court, holding him in a tight embrace. It seemed so strange to hear this mighty figure speaking of the master of mankind as any common son would talk of his parent. Dorne continued.
"We left my brother, Horus, intent on making that voyage at long last, only to once more find the universe conspiring against us."
Garrow failed to keep a glimmer of unease from his face at the mention of the War Master's name, and he was aware that Sigismund noticed it. Garrow knew from talk aboard the Endurance that the Imperial Fists had departed the 63rd Fleet some time before the Death Guard had arrived from the Yorgul assault mission. In his years in the Legion, he had never shared the battlefield with the Sons of Dawn, and knew of them only by their standing with the other legions. Fierce warriors and masters of siegecraft, it was said that the Imperial Fists could hold any citadel and make it impregnable beyond the reach of any enemy. Garrow had seen their work firsthand, in the design of fortresses built on Helica and Zophor's world. What he had heard of them appeared to be accurate. Dorne and his men seemed as rigid as castle walls.
"The storms," ventured Nathaniel. "They almost claimed our lives."
Sigismund nodded.
"If you will permit me to comment, Lord, I have never seen the like. The tempest came upon us the moment we took to the Empyrean, and it rendered the careful routes of our navigators useless. Whatever waypoints we had turned to sand and disintegrated. The finest of the Navis nobility, and they were reduced to the level of blind children flailing in a featureless desert."
Dorne stepped away from the window.
"This is how we came to find you, Garrow. The storms ringed us in a disordered region of the warp, put us in the maddening stillness of their eye. The phalanx and her fleet were becalmed. Every ship we attempted to send beyond the storms was torn apart."
A tiny flicker of grim irony crossed the Primarch's face.
"The Immaterium besieged us."
"You saw his flare," said Cruz, "across all that distance, and you saw it."
"A bold risk," allowed the Primarch. "You could not have known that there would be anyone within range to glimpse it."
"I had faith," Garrow replied.
Dorne studied him for a long moment as if he were going to question the captain's words, but instead continued on.
"The shockwave from the detonations of the drives disrupted the patterns of the storm barrier. The energy of the flare allowed our navigators to get their bearings once more."
He inclined his head.
"We owe you a debt, Death Guard. You may consider it repaid by our rescue of your ship's crew."
"My thanks, my lord."
Garrow felt his gut tighten.
"My only wish is that the events that brought us to this place had not come to pass."
"You preempt my questions, Garrow. Now you understand how I came to your aid. It is your turn to illuminate me. I would have you explain why a lone Death Guard warship found itself in the uncharted territories, why signs of battle against Imperial guns lay upon her, and why one of your battle brothers lies in my infirmary, wrecked by an illness that confounds the very best of my legion's apothecaries."
Garrow threw a look at Cruz for support, and the veteran nodded back to him.
"Lord Dorne, what I have to say will not sit well with you, and at the end of the telling, you may wish that you had not asked for it."
"Oh?"
The Primarch moved to the middle of the Sanctorum chamber, bidding them to follow.
"You think you know better than I what will distress me? Perhaps my brother, Mortarion, allows such presumption among the Death Guard, but that is not the manner of the Imperial Fists. You will give me the complete truth, and you will excise nothing. Then, before my fleet makes space for Terra, I will decide how to deal with you and the rest of your 70 errant Astartes."
Not once did Dorne raise his voice, or show even the slightest fraction of aggression behind his orders. Yet the commands came with such quiet force that Garrow found them impossible to resist. He was aware that Sigismund and a cohort of his men were at the edges of the chamber, watching him and Cruz for any signs of behaviour that might mark them as untrustworthy.
"Very well, my lord," he replied.
Garrow took a deep breath and began the story at Istvan and the Lupercal's court. On any other occasion, Cruz might have been willing to let his talkative manner come to the fore and lend his own viewpoint to a story told by one of his fellow Astartes. But as the lad Garrow began to unfold the events to Dorne and his men, Cruz found himself quieted. He searched inside himself and realized there was nothing he could add to the Death Guard's dry, careful explanations, just a nod now and then when Garrow looked to him for confirmation of some minor point. The Lunar Wolf became aware of the silence that had fallen across the rest of the Sanctorum chamber. Sigismund and the other Imperial Fists in the black-trimmed armour of the First Company were as still as statues, their faces stoic against the unfolding tale. Rogal Dorne was the only point of motion in the room, the Primarch walking back and forth in a slow pattern, lost in thought, occasionally pausing to stop and give Garrow his full, unwavering attention. It was not until Garrow reached the moment of Eidolon's orders to kill Saul Tarvitz and his refusal to obey that Dorne spoke again.
"You disobeyed a ranking officer's direct command?"
It was not a question.
"I did."
"What evidence did you have at that time that Tarvitz was not, as Eidolon said, a renegade and a turncoat?"
Garrow hesitated, shifting uncomfortably on his augmetic leg.
"None, lord. Only my faith in my honour, brother."
"That word again," said the Primarch. "Continue, Captain."
Cruz had heard second-hand from conversations with Sergeant Haker of the firefight on the Eisenstein's gun deck, but it was only as Garrow relayed it that he found a true sense of it. The Death Guard balked at repeating the seditious declarations of Commander Grulgor, and when Dorne ordered him to, a new tension emerged across the room as he finally gave voice to them. Cruz saw anger pushing at Sigismund's lips, and finally the captain spoke.
"I cannot hear this without answer. If this is true, then tell me how the War Master allowed Death Guard and Emperor's children alike to make these plays for power under his very nose. The unsanctioned virus bombardment of an entire world, the execution of civilians. How did he become so blind overnight, Garrow?"
"He was not blind," Garrow said grimly. "Horus sees only too well."
He looked the Primarch in the eye.
"Lord, your brother is not ignorant of this duplicity. He is the author of it, and his hands are stained with the blood of men from his own legion, from mine and from those of the World Eaters and the Emperor's children as well."
Dorne moved so quickly that Cruz flinched, but the Master of the Imperial Fists was not coming for him. There was a crack of sound and Garrow fell away, skidding back across the bright blue marble of the Sanctorum's flooring. Cruz saw Garrow hover on the edge of unconsciousness, a livid bruise forming on his face. With care, the Death Guard blinked back to wakefulness and worked at resetting his jawbone.
"For even daring to think of such a thing in my presence, I should have you flogged and then vented to the void,"
growled the Primarch, every word a razor.
"I will not hear any more of this fantasy."
"You must,"
Cruz blurted, taking a half step forward. He ignored the ratcheting of slides on the bolters of Sigismund's men.
"You must hear him out."
"You dare to give me an order?"
Dorne faced the old warrior.
"A relic who should have been retired centuries ago? You dare to do so?"
The Acton saw his opening and took it.
"I do. And furthermore, I know that you will. If you truly thought that Garrow's words had no value, then you would have killed him where he stood."
He moved to help Garrow to his feet.
"Even in your moment of anger, you pulled a blow that could have broken his neck. because you want to hear everything. That is what you asked for, isn't it? The complete truth?
For an instant, Crewe saw a flash of titanic rage in the Primarch's gaze, and then felt his blood run cold.
"That's it, you old fool," he told himself. "That was a word too far. He's going to kill us both for our boldness."
Then Dorn gestured to Sigismund, and his Astartes lowered their guns.
"Speak," he told Garrow. "Tell me it all."
Garrow fought down the giddiness and pain. Dorn was so fast, even in that tonnage of armour. He was lightning. Had he intended real harm against him, Garrow knew that he would never have seen it coming. With care, he swallowed and took a painful breath.
"After the bombing, I knew that I had no other choice but to do as Saul Tarvitz and I had discussed, and take a warning to Terra. With Grulgor dead, I ordered my men to secure the Eisenstein. In the interim, Captain Cruz had come aboard with the civilians."
"The Remembrancers and the Iterator," said the Primarch. "They had been aboard Horus's flagship."
"Aye, Lord," added the Lunar Wolf. "My battle brother, Garviel Loken, entrusted their safety to me. The girl Keela, she..."
He paused, marshalling his thoughts.
"She suggested that Captain Garrow could help us."
"Loken," said Sigismund. "My lord, I know him. We met aboard the Vengeful Spirit."
Dorn glanced aside.
"What was your measure of him, First Captain?"
"A Chthonian, and all that entails. With a strong spirit, if a little naive. He seemed trustworthy. A man of principles."
The Primarch absorbed this.
"Continue, Garrow."
Nathaniel ignored the tension in his jaw and relayed the details of the signal sent to Typhon and the Eisenstein's pursuit by the Terminus Est, then the catastrophic voyage through the warp. There was a moment when one of Sigismund's men made a derisive noise under his breath as Garrow described the freakish revivification of Grulgor's dead men, but Dorn silenced that with a hard look.
"There are stranger powers that lurk within the Immaterium than we may know," the warlord said darkly. "But what you say tests reason, even with that qualification. These things you speak of come dangerously close to primitive ideals of sorcery and magic."
The Death Guard nodded.
"I do not deny it, Lord Dorn. But you asked me to give you the truth as I saw it, and this is what I saw. Something in the warp brought Grulgor back to life. It animated his contaminated flesh through the very disease that had claimed him. Do not ask me for an explanation, sir, as I have none."
"This is what you come to me with."
The Primarch's slow anger filled the room like smoke, heavy and dark.
"A convoluted story of treachery and conspiracy among the Emperor's sons. A collection of ill-informed opinions and rash actions made with base emotion and not cold clarity."
He advanced slowly on Garrow, and it took all of Nathaniel's courage not to back away.
"If I were to have my brothers in this room right now, Mortarion, Fulgrim, Angron, Horus, what would they say of your tale? Do you think that you would even be able to draw a breath before you were struck down for such an outright fiction?"
"I know it is difficult to accept."
"Difficult!"
Dorn raised his voice for the first time, and the room shook with it.
"Difficult is a winding labyrinth or a complex skein of navigational formulae. This is against our very creed and character as the Emperor's chosen warriors."
He glared at Garrow, eyes aflame.
"I do not know what to make of you, Garrow. You carry yourself like an honest man, but if you are not a traitor and a deceiver, then you can only be possessed by insanity."
He stabbed a finger at Cruz.
"Should I make a concession for some contagious senility, perhaps? Did the warp addle your minds and create this hallucination between you?"
Garrow heard the sound of his blood rushing in his ears. Everything was going wrong, falling apart around him. In his rush to find a rescuer for the Eisenstein and a way to get the message out, it had never occurred to him that he would not be believed. He looked away.
"Look at me when I speak to you, Death Guard," snapped the Primarch. These lies you bring into my personal chambers, they sicken and disgust me. That you would dare to say such things about a hero of such matchless character as my brother Horus. It vexes me beyond my capacity for description.
He placed a massive finger on the sternum of Garrow's armour.
How cheap you must hold your integrity to give it up so easily. I weep for Mortarion if a man of such low honour as you could rise to command a company of the 14th Legion.
Dorne's hand closed into a massive brass fist.
Know this. The only reason I do not tear you limb from limb for your defamation is that I know my brothers will reserve that pleasure for themselves.
Garrow felt the decking turn to mud beneath his boots, and his chest caught in an invisible vice, returning to him the same sickening sensations that he had felt in the corridor outside the Navis Sanctorum, and in the grip of the Xenos Warbeast. As he had there, he reached for and found the strength of will that had carried him this far.
"My faith. Are you blind?"
he whispered. Dorne was thunder incarnate.
"What did you say to me?"
"I asked if you were blind, Lord, because I fear you must be."
The words came from nowhere, even as some part of Garrow marvelled at the mad daring of what he was saying.
"Only one struck by such a terrible ailment could be as you are. Yours is the blindness that only a brother might have. That of a keen judgment clouded by admiration and respect, clouded by your love for your kinsman, the War Master."
It was not often that Rogel Dorn's stern mask cracked, but it did so now. The fury of a god-made flesh erupted upon his aspect, and the Primarch drew his powerful chainsword in a flashing golden arc of roaring death.
"I rescind my former statement,"
he bellowed.
"Get to your knees and accept your death, while you still have the chance to die like an Astartes."
"Lord Dorne, no!"
It was a woman's voice, and it came from across the room, but it carried with it a wave of such emotion that every man in the Sanctorum, even the Primarch himself, hesitated. Cruz turned and saw the girl Keela running across the blue marble tiles, her boots clacking against them. Behind her were Cinderman, Mercedes Oliton, and a pair of Imperial fists with their guns at the ready. Iacton felt the echo of Euphrates' voice resonate through him, and he remembered the strange warmth he had felt from her hands upon his chest aboard the Vengeful Spirit as things had turned to hell.
"What is this intrusion?"
snarled Dorne, his humming blade still hanging at the end of his swing towards Garrow's throat.
"They demanded entry," said one of the guards. "She... the woman, she..."
"She can be very persuasive at times," noted Cruz.
Fearlessly, Euphrates stepped forward to face the Primarch.
"Rogel Dorne, hero of the gold, stone man. You stand upon a turning point in the history of the Imperium, of the galaxy itself. If you strike Nathaniel Garrow down for daring to give you his candor, then you truly are as blind as he says."
"Who are you?"
demanded the figure in gold.
"I am Euphrates Keela, formerly an imagist and remembrancer of the 63rd Expeditionary Fleet. Now I am only a vessel for the Emperor's will."
"Your name means nothing to me," Dorne retorted. "Now stand aside or die with him."
He heard Oliton whimper and bury her face in Cinderman's shoulder. Cruz expected to see fear bloom on Keela's face, but instead there was sadness and compassion.
"Rogel Dorne,"
she said, holding out a hand to him,
"do not be afraid. You are more than the stone and steel face that you show the stars. You can be open. You must not fear the truth."
"I am the Imperial Fist,"
he shouted, and the words hit like hammers.
"I am fear incarnate."
"Then see the fidelity of Nathaniel's words. Look upon the proof of his veracity."
She beckoned Oliton forward, and with the iterator giving her support, the documentarist came closer. Cruz smiled a little as the dark-skinned woman composed herself enough to show a facade of her more usual elegant manner.
"I am Mercedes Oliton, Remembrancer,"
she announced with a curtsy.
If the Lord Primarch will allow, I will provide a recollection of these events to him.
Olerton pointed to a hololithic projector dais mounted in the floor. Dawn brought his sword to his chest, fuming.
This will be my last indulgence of you.
Sigismund stepped up and directed Mercedes to the hololith. With care, the documentarist drew a fine cable from among the brocade of her dress and traced it along the seamless crown of her hairless, elongated skull. Iacton heard a soft click as a concealed socket beneath the skin mated to the wire. The other end she guided to an interface plate on the dais. This done, Olerton sank into a cross-legged position and bowed her head.
I am gifted with many methods in which I may remember. I will write and I will compose image streams, and this is aided by a series of mnemonic implant coils.
She brushed a finger over her head once more.
I open these now. What I will show you, my lord, is as I witnessed it. These images cannot be fabricated or tampered with. This is...
She faltered, trembling, her words thick and close to tears.
This is what happened.
It's all right, my dear, said Cinderman, taking her hand. Be brave.
It will be difficult for her,
explained Keeler.
She will experience an echo of emotions from the events.
The hololith came to life with an opaque jumble of images and half-formed shapes. In the dreamlike mass, Cruz saw glimpses of faces he knew, and some he did not. Loken, that degenerate poet, Carcassy, the astropath, Ing Mei Sing, Petronella Vivar, and her bloody mute, Maggard. Then the mist shifted, and for a moment Olerton looked around the room, the hololith screening what she saw. Her gaze froze on Dawn, and he nodded. The haze of the hololith changed, and Garrow found his attention was caught by the dance of motion and replay within it. He had only heard Cruz's second-hand explanation of what had transpired in the vengeful spirit's main audience chamber, but here he was, seeing it first-hand through the sight of an eyewitness. Scenes of battlefield butchery transmitted from the surface of the Coral City on Istvan III hovered before them, and Olerton sobbed a little. Garrow, Cruz, and the men of the Imperial Fists were no strangers to war, but the obvious wanton horror of the combat was enough even to give them pause. He saw Sigismund grimace in disgust. Then the recording turned as Mercedes looked to the War Master upon a tall podium, his face lit with a cold, hard purpose.
Your remembrances say you want to see war. Well, here it is.
The relish in his voice was undeniable. This was not a warrior prosecuting a necessary battle, but a man running his hands through tides of blood with open satisfaction.
Horus.
The name was the ghost of a whisper from Dawn's lips, but Garrow heard the question in it, the puzzlement. The Primarch saw the wrongness in his brother's manner. Then, through Mercedes Olerton's eyes, they watched the bombing of Istvan III and the Coral City. Darts of silver surged from the ships in orbit, like diving raptors falling on prey, and as the voices of remembrances long since gunned down by Astartes bolters gasped and screamed, those darts struck home and coiled into black rings of unstoppable death.
Emperor's blood, whispered Sigismund.
Garrow told the truth. He bombed his own men.
What is it?
Asked Olerton, speaking in unison with her own voice on the recording. Keeler's recorded words answered her.
You have already seen it. The Emperor showed you through me. It is death.
The recording jumped and unspooled. In fast blinks of recall, they saw Cruz fight the turncoat bodyguard Maggard in the launch bay, the escape from Horus's warship, the attack of the Terminus Est, and more. Finally, Dawn turned away.
Enough. End this woman.
Cinderman gently detached the cable from the hololith, and Mercedes jerked like a discarded marionette as the images died. The cold, clear air inside the sanctorum was rich with tension, as the Primarch slowly sheathed his chainsword. He ran his fingers over his face, his eyes.
Perhaps. Did I not see?
Dawn looked to Garrow, and some measure of his great potency was dimmed.
Such folly. Is it any wonder I would rebel at the reality of so mad a truth, even to the point of killing the messenger who brought it to me?
No, Lord, Garrow admitted. I had no wish to believe it either, but the truth cares little for what we wish.
Sigismund looked to his commander.
Master, what shall we do?
Garrow felt a stab of compassion for the first captain. He knew the pain, the shame that the Imperial Fist had to be feeling at that moment.
Convene the captains and brief them. But see, this goes no further, Dawn said after a moment. Garrow, Cruz, that order includes you. Keep the Eisenstein survivors silent. I will not have this news spread through my fleet uncontrolled. I will choose when to reveal it to the Legion.
The Astartes nodded.
Aye, Lord.
Dawn walked away.
You will leave me now. I must think on this matter.
He threw a last look at Sigismund.
No one is to enter my chambers until I emerge.
The first captain saluted.
If you wish my counsel, Lord...
I do not.
The Primarch left them. And after they left, Garrow could not help but see the expression of deep concern on Sigismund's face as he sealed the sanctorum shut behind them. Garrow saw Keela standing by the door and glimpsed a single tear tracing a line down her cheek.
"Why do you weep?"
he asked.
"Is it for us?"
Euphrates shook her head and gestured to the heavy locked hatch.
"For him, Nathaniel, because he can't. Today you and I have broken a brother's heart, and nothing will ever mend it."
Dawn's fleet readied itself for a return to the warp, and the men and women of the Eisenstein found themselves left outside the work and progress, isolated in temporary quarters deep inside the stone corridors of the phalanx. Meditation did not come so easily for Garrow, and so he prowled the archways and passages of the great star fortress. Once the phalanx might have been a planetoid or a minor moon of some distant world, but now it was a cathedral dedicated to the business of war and the glories of the 7th Legiones Astartes. He saw galleries of battle honours that went on for kilometres and corridors to whole sections of the fortress that duplicated the conditions of different combat environments for training purposes. Garrow dallied in a vast chamber that replicated the Inwittian frost dunes where legend said Dawn had grown to manhood. All around him, warriors in golden armour moved with sober intent, without pause or doubt, as he stepped carefully, still smoothing out the limp from his battle injury. He felt out of place, the marble and green of his war gear ringing a wrong note among the hornet yellow and black trim of the Imperial Fists. Finally, in such a way that he could almost fool himself into thinking it was happenstance, Garrow found himself outside the quarters that had been granted to Euphrates Keeler. She opened the door before he could knock.
Hello, Nathaniel. I was preparing a little tisane. Would you like some?
Keeler left the door open and vanished back into the chamber. He sighed and followed her in.
There has been no word from Lord Dawn yet?
None,
confirmed Garrow, examining the spare space of the quarters.
He has not left his sanctorum for a day and a night. Captain Sigismund maintains command authority in the meantime.
The Primarch has a lot to consider. We can only begin to imagine how troubled our news has made him.
Aye,
he admitted, taking a cup of the pungent brew from Keeler's delicate hands. He shifted, taking the weight on his augmetic. The machine limb was the least of his concerns these days.
What of you?
She asked.
Where has this turn of events brought you?
I had hoped that I might find some time to rest, to take sleep. It has been elusive, however.
I thought you Astartes never slept.
A misconception. Our implants allow us to maintain a semi-dormant state while still being aware of our surroundings.
Garrow sipped the infusion and found it to his taste.
I have tried this past day, but what awaits me there is disquieting.
What do you see in your dreams?
The Death Guard frowned.
A battle on a world I do not know. The landscape seems familiar but difficult to place. My brothers are there, Decius and Voyen, and Dawn's warriors as well. We are fighting a creature of some loathsome aspect. A beast of disease and pestilence, like the things that boarded the Eisenstein. Clouds of carrion flies darken the air, and I feel sickened to my very core.
He looked away, dismissing it.
It is just a mirage.
There was a sheaf of Divinitatis tracts on her desk, and a thick candle burning on the mantel.
I read Caleb's papers. I think I have a better understanding of what you people believe.
Euphrates saw where he was looking.
The flock have been keeping to themselves since the rescue, she explained. There haven't been any more gatherings.
She smiled.
You said you people, Nathaniel. Is that because you don't think you're one of us?
I am Astartes, servant of the Imperial Truth.
Keela waved him into silence.
We've had that conversation before. The two do not have to be mutually exclusive.
She looked into his eyes.
You are carrying so much weight upon your shoulders, but you're still reluctant to let others bear it with you. This message, the warning, it is not yours alone. All of us who fled the murder at Isfahan, we carry it as well.
Perhaps so, he allowed. But that does nothing to lighten my burden. I am in command.
He faltered for a moment.
I was in command of the Eisenstein, and the message remains my duty. Even you told me that it was my mission.
Keela shook her head.
No, Nathaniel. The warning is just an aspect of it. Your duty, as you said just now, is the truth. You have risked your life for it. You have gone against every will in your heart to join your kinsmen to serve it. You even stood in the face of a Primarch's fury and did not flinch.
Yes, but when I think of all the darkness and destruction that will come of it, I feel as if I am about to be crushed. The import of this, Keela, the sheer magnitude of Horus's betrayal, it will unleash a civil war that will set the galaxy alight.
And because you carry the warning, you feel responsible?
Garrow looked away.
I'm only a soldier. I thought I was, but now...
The woman drew closer.
What is it, Nathaniel? Tell me, what do you believe?
He put down the cup and produced Caleb's papers and the brass icon.
Before he died, my housecarl told me I was of purpose. At the time, I did not understand what he meant. But now... Now I cannot question it. What if Caleb was right, if you were right? Am I the instrument of the Emperor's will? Your prayers say that the Emperor protects. Did he protect me so I could fulfill this duty?
Garrow spoke faster and faster, his words racing to match the pace of his thoughts.
All the things I have seen and heard, the visions that touched my thoughts, were these to strengthen my resolve? Part of me cries out that this is the highest hubris, but then I look around and see that I have been chosen by him. If that is so, then what manner of being can the Emperor be but a divine one?
Keela reached out a hand and touched his arm, giving voice to the words tore the breath from his chest.
At last you see with clear eyes, Nathaniel.
The woman looked up at him, and she was crying, but they were tears of joyous faith. A summons was waiting for him in the sleeping cell where Garrow had been billeted. He followed Sigismund's terse message to a new tram that carried him up through networks of rail tunnels, more complex than those of a planet-bound hive metropolis. He arrived at the fortress command centre, and a hard-faced Imperial Fist sergeant escorted him to an audience chamber that rivaled the Lupercal's court for size and grandeur. Garrow felt an uncomfortable flash of memory. The last time he had been called to an assembly like this, it set in motion the events of the War Master's heresy. Iacton Cruz was already there, along with the captains from each of many companies of the Imperial Fists. The warriors in yellow barely acknowledged the arrival of the Death Guard, with only Sigismund granting him a terse nod in greeting.
"Ho, lad," said the Lunar Wolf, "it seems we're to know our fate soon enough."
Despite it all, Garrow felt a new wellspring of vitality deep inside. The words of his conversation with Keeler still fresh in his thoughts.
"I'm ready to meet it," he told the veteran, "whatever it is."
Cruz smiled a little, sensing the change in him.
"That's the spirit. We'll see this through to the end."
"Aye."
Garrow studied the other men in the room.
"This is Dorn's senior cadre. They seem a somber lot."
"True enough. Even on the best of days, the Imperial Fists are a stiff breed. I remember battles my lads of the Third fought with Ephriad, my opposite number."
He indicated a bearded Astartes in the other group.
"Never saw him crack a smile, not once in a year-long campaign. That's Alexis Pollux over there, Yonad and Tyre from the Sixth. It's not for nothing they call them the Stone Men."
He shook his head.
"And now they'll be grimmer still."
"Sigismund told them about Horus."
Cruz gave him a nod.
"But that's not the sum of it. I've heard rumours that sounds of violence were heard inside Dorn's quarters. One can only imagine the destruction a Primarch's temper might wreak when awakened."
"And Rogel Dorn would never be one to vent his frustration openly."
He studied the other captains again.
"The humour of a Primarch sets the manner of his legion."
"It's their way," Cruz noted. "They bury their rages under rock and steel."
The tall doors at the end of the chamber yawned open, and from the dimness beyond came the master of the Imperial Fists. The battle armour he had worn when Garrow had first seen him was gone, and instead Dorn was clad in robes of a simple cut. But the change in dress did nothing to diminish his presence. If anything, the Primarch seemed larger still without the trappings of ceramite and flex steel to confine him. Sigismund and the other captains bowed, with Garrow and Cruz following suit. Given what he knew of the Imperial Fists, Garrow expected some sort of ceremony or formal procedure. But instead, Dorn strode firmly to the middle of the chamber and cast around, looking at each man in turn. Garrow saw anger set hard in granite behind those eyes, the echo of the rage that he had briefly seen directed at him. His mouth went dry. He had no desire ever to come that close to it again.
"Brothers," rumbled the Primarch, "something has begun in the Istvan system that goes against every tenet of our oath to the Lord of Terror. While the full dimensions of it are not yet clear to me, the matter of what must be done about it is."
He took a step towards the Death Guard and the Lunar Wolf.
"For good or ill, the statement brought to us by Battle Captain Garrow must be taken onward to its ultimate destination. It must reach the Emperor's ears, as only he can decide how to act upon it. That choice, as much as I regret it, is beyond even me."
"My liege, if I may speak," began Captain Tyre. "If the veracity of this horrifying act is undoubted, then how can we allow it to go unanswered? If treachery is stirring in the Istvan system, it cannot be given time to gain a foothold."
A chorus of nods came from the other men around him.
"We will answer. Of that you may be assured," replied Dorn with quiet force. "Captain Ephriad, Captain Holbrecht, and their veteran companies will form a detachment with my personal guard and remain aboard the phalanx with me. At the conclusion of this audience, I will order our navigators to set a course for the Sol system. Captain Garrow has fulfilled his responsibility in bringing this warning to us, and it is my aim to personally see that task completed. I will go on to Terra, as we originally intended.
He glanced at his first captain.
Sigismund, my strong right arm. You will take direct command of the rest of our legion and its war fleet. You will execute a return voyage to the Istvan system under the auspice of a combat deployment and consider yourself to be entering hostile territory. The journey back will be difficult. Warp storms still rage in that sector, and you will find the passage challenging. Go there, First Captain. Support our kinsmen loyal to the Emperor, and learn what is occurring on those worlds.
If the War Master has turned his back on Terra, what are my orders?
Sigismund asked, ashen-faced. Dawn's countenance became rigid.
Tell him his brother Rogel will have him answer for it.